Business is simple. It's just not easy. We focus on three things to help you run and grow your business more easily: talent, sales, and how to scale. This is the Talent, Sales, and Scale Show. Hey everyone, Brian Whittington with this episode of the Talent, Sales, and Scale Show. We're going to have a pretty cool topic here today talking about coaching. So the curious thing is, everyone talks about coaching, but the reality is, and what Chelsea Side is going to share with us today from Marlo, co-founder and COO over at Marlo, is the when and how to coach, in a subtopic of, you know, what in the world is the confusion between, am I supervising? Am I coaching? Am I training? Am I mentoring? Like, is there a difference? And so Chelsea's going to give us the insight to that. So Chelsea, with all that said, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks, Brian. I'm really glad to be here. And as you've learned, this is a topic I'm very passionate about. So I'm excited to discuss it all with you today.
Yes, you should have seen the back and forth whenever I was asking Chelsea to be on my show. She's like, if you mean this. So she is very passionate about coaching. So I can't wait to get into this. So with that said, I mean, all right, so you're a founder, a co-founder of Marlo, and that's what you do is coaching. So what? Why should we listen to you?
Yeah, sure. So, you know, as you kind of share with my title, I'm an expert in talent development. It's what I've always done, worked and led people operations, business operations, and teams everywhere from Marlo, where we consult to companies in all different industries and how to best develop their talent, to companies like Patreon, where I was one of the first people operations lead. All that's wonderful. Why you should actually listen to me, not just am I incredibly passionate about these topics, but I know them firsthand. I started my career with very little support or guidance or resources. I had no idea what I was doing, and I was sort of getting lucky. And my very first boss in a salaried role was the COO of the Brookings Institution. And this individual was just so open and trusting and vulnerable with me and with my career growth, and really set me up with a platform to learn how to succeed. And what that did for me was realize, wow, without that opportunity, I'd probably not be where I am today. And unfortunately, not many people have managers they love and managers who help them be successful. And so where can I dedicate my career to delivering that outcome for others? And that's really where I got into coaching and Marlo and everything else, is trying to perpetuate the experience and the benefits you can get from really strong partners and really strong managers and mentors.
Well, so let's jump right into, how do we define coaching? Because it seems to be this ooey gooey, like everybody says it. Like, what? How are you defining coaching, or what would you say coaching is?
So I say coaching is a partnership between generally two individuals, a partnership based in questions and discussion, where the coach is there to help an individual set a clear goal and create a structure and a process for them to work towards that goal, and accountability to make sure that they achieve it. And the reason I say it that generally is, if you think about it, that can apply to sports, which we hear all the time. That can apply to marriage, life, wellness, professional, et cetera. It's a partnership between two people, based in questions with a goal and a path to achieve it.
Okay. So then I guess, why is there so much grief about coaching then? Because, you know, you're going to get people that push back and say, well, I'm coaching them. And they're like, no, you're training. Well, I'm training them. No, you're, so what's the, so I guess step us through the difference between, when are we coaching? When are we training? When are we managing? When are we mentoring?
Sure. So that to me gets into the nuance of the word partnership and what that really means. If you're going to be a partner to someone, you view them as an expert. You're holding them in a position where they have equal footing. You're doing what in International Coaching Federation terms we say is being in the coach position. You truly value the expertise, the knowledge, the credibility, the partnership with the other person across this table. That doesn't work as a trainer. When I come in and I say, like, listen, I'm an expert and I'm here to train you and tell you what to do. Or when you come in and you say, I'm a manager, I have authority over you, I have ultimate decision-making power, I control your compensation and your future at this company, but also trust me as your coach, right? And so, like, lines get really blurry when you have other functional roles besides just being a partner, which is why having a true certified coach who's exclusively your coach is so important, because they really are just your partner versus also your manager, your trainer, your boss, your whatever other words.
So would a coach ever have a training side of it? Because is there a teaching mentoring element while you're coaching, or whenever I'm doing that particular segment, then I'm no longer coaching?
Yeah. So some coaches do practice, and something I like is like talking about wearing different hats. I had a call with my coach this morning and she did that very eloquently. She was like, actually, that could be a really interesting discussion, but I take my coaching hat off and I think it'd more be a person-to-person conversation. So at a different time, let's have a call. And so in a training teaching element, generally a coach who's going to be really ethical about it is probably going to be explicit into when they're coaching and when they're filling other roles, but it's more rare. The other thing that I would say is that the question of advice, I think, comes up in the question you just posed. And so what coaches generally have started to move towards with advice that I like a lot is if it is black and white, like if the answer is just obvious and non-negotiable and not subjective, yeah, give them advice, right? Like we're not trying to ask leading questions. So it's not like, well, Brian, what do you think you should do? I obviously know what you should do and I'm not telling you. So if it is that obvious, I hope coaches share it and don't think of it as advice, but think of it more as truths, right? If it's an observable truth or it's just like an objective fact, I'm going to share that. So as a, for instance, I coach in situational leadership. Situational leadership has a largely agreed upon academic definition that I will share as an academically agreed upon definition, right? I'm not going to be like, what do you think situational leadership means? It means something already. And that's me sort of giving advice, but I'm giving it because it's that obvious. Or if someone's like, I have no idea what other options I could have moving forward, I'll say things like, you could call them, you could research, you could Google it, you could, and they're like, oh, I didn't think about it. Right. And that's, again, I'm not telling you what to do. It's just their obvious answers. And I'm not trying to withhold that information.
Now, what would you say to the person that's going, yeah, you know what, you're splitting hairs. It's all the same. You know, I think you're overly complicating it. What would you say to that person?
I would say they haven't had a good coach. but I'd also say I hear them. What I share is if you think about a mentor or consultant or advisor, I want them to tell me what to do, which is wonderful. And there's so many places, especially when there's a correct technical path, where it makes more sense to tell me what to do. Let's say I'm in a financial role, my company's working towards an IPO in the future. There are specific decisions you should make in how you're developing the financial department of that company to move towards an IPO. I highly recommend you get both a mentor who's going to be a little more informal and probably an advisor and a consultant too, right? Like these are real financial risks that you're taking. If that same person is saying, I'm having trouble motivating my financial team and I'm the CFO and I'm just not motivating these people correctly, an advisor or mentor to me is just not going to cut it because they're going to give you advice based on themselves, their own role, their history, their past, and their experience. And it's not one size fits all when you're thinking about motivating people. And so that's where I think a coach plays a better role than an advisor. I don't want you to tell me what to do. I want you to help me think about this challenge strategically.
So are you suggesting that a coach's main job is to help that person to find motivation?
Yeah, mostly. I mean, what's your goal at hand? I want to motivate my team. What does that mean? Can mean 9 million things. So the first thing we do in coaching is called contracting. And one of my favorite mentors always says, if you don't have a contract, it's not a coaching call, it's a call. And it's very stressful because it's like, okay, did I get to the contract? And the contract is agreeing, what's your goal? What's your intention? What do you want to get out of this conversation today? And I want help motivating my team. Fine, what does that mean? What does it mean to motivate your team? What does help look like? What do you already know how to do? And what do you actually need help with? Because don't use my time or even don't use your own time for something you just know how to do and you're just asking me for no reason, right? What are you really blocked by? What's challenging you here? What's a struggle? And what does that look like? Because that's the first thing we're doing in coaching always is like defining the goal in a more meaningful values-based way.
So, and this is where, you know, I'm always challenged is, okay, so I find the challenge. I find what the roadblock is. Then I guess this is where I'm saying I'm confused because sure. I would ask questions, but if they don't know how to get past that roadblock, me as a coach, I would want to, like, if I'm coaching a football team, I'm going to grab them and put them in position and move them around. If I'm coaching a basketball team, I'm going to say, you need to box out like this, right? So
yeah.
I'm doing teaching while I'm coaching. So I guess sure. That's where I'm missing. Why can't you do that as a coach?
Totally. You can. I really think you're going to be wrong. Your advice is not, your advice just isn't going to be the best because I don't know your brain. I don't know what makes you tick. And I don't work with your team members every day normally. So I don't know their brains or what makes them tick either. I don't have that context. And so as a coach in that role, and this is the hardest thing about coaching, and I think the most beautiful thing about coaching and the certification process, this is what scales the levels. How well you do this exact topic and you step back and you truly let go is what scales you to the highest master's degree in coaching, is your ability to let go, remove your ego, be truly humble and in awe of your client in such a way that you believe they have the expertise and the answers. And your job is to help them find it. They're blocked. They're confused. They don't know what to do next. Nothing you tell them to do is going to be the right intrinsically motivating solution for them. You need to help them find what's next and how to get there. And if it's so obvious that I could just say, Brian, go fix it. Normally, I believe in your expertise so much that I think you would have already found it. And so that's what I'm normally doing with my clients is like, listen, you're a highly capable person. If you're unsure about how to set strategic goals, why am I going to be the one to tell you what strategic goals are? Let's have space to explore what's blocking you and how to move forward in a more productive way. Don't just come on and say, Chelsea, I need to set more strategic goals. Here were our goals last year. What would you fix? Well, if you think I'm so great that I could have just fixed it, you're really undermining and underselling yourself, right?
Yeah. And I guess this is where for years I've been, you know, really struggling with this. And because you hear so many different variants. So in what you're saying, okay, yeah, if it's obvious, because let me feed this back to you in a different way.
Sure.
I'm working with somebody as their coach. And now, by the way, let me just do a quick aside and then I'll come back to my question. Whenever I'm a manager or whenever I'm a leader, and I want to hit your situational leadership, because in situational leadership, there's a couple of different quadrants. And depending on their experience level is I'm going to lead them differently from the I'm being very directive as the leader. That's more of that managerial supervisor until they're at the highest level. Then I'm just moving out of the way and kind of coaching them at that point. Is that an accurate summary there?
You're delegating them. You're coaching when they lack skill. Once they have skill, you're just delegating.
Okay. So with that said, I also see it as when I'm, you're really trying to pull the best version of them out to get them to self-realize. Is that kind of the whole premise of this? If I'm coaching, I'm really looking to pull your capabilities, because oftentimes we as the outsider see so much more in that person than they see in themselves. And it's really getting them to live up to their full potential. Is that kind of what you're saying is what we're doing?
Yeah. And that's a good example. And not just in that moment. So I think something a little more, or I'll use situational leadership because you just defined it. So that's very helpful. If an individual comes to me with a specific example, and we're using situational leadership as a framework to determine what they should do next, I'm not telling them what to do. I'm asking them questions within a situational leadership framework. What's the skill of the person at hand? How willing are they to complete the task? How much time do you have? What's the risk to consider? Based on that, I can help you get in a quadrant, right? So I ask these things. From this, we identify the quadrant where they want to move forward. That's normally, okay, well, it looks like we're sitting in this quadrant. What do you think? And then we get into the actual application. And this is where coaching gets really helpful. It's like, wonderful. I know I need to coach now. What does that mean? Like, what do I do next? And so we can talk about what does coaching look like? We can come up with examples. That person will often say like, Chelsea, you do this all the time. Just how would you word it? What would you say? And I was like, sure. If it was me, as me, the person, this is what I would say. You can absolutely say that. What's going to happen next time you're in the situation? Are you going to call me again every single time? And so that's where we're trying to help the person reach that potential. It's not that I can't give, maybe if I've learned enough about you in a consultative manner, a perfect diagnostic answer in that moment, and maybe it'll nail it in the workplace, but people are weird and complex. And the reality is the one sentence wording that you and I align on is probably in real life, not going to play out exactly as you hoped it would. Yeah. And you need to be aware enough of the whole situation to improv and to play off the individual and to be prepared for every next action. And I'm not going to be there working on your behalf. And I never believe my answer is going to be perfect because people are weird. If it was me and I was the person receiving this information, that's what I would want to hear. Not really sure what that person would want to hear. Let's try out some options.
So Really, then, I think you just really laid it out here very succinctly. The difference is, hey, how would you do it? And they're coming to you to advice and you can give that to them. But if you give them what your suggestion would be, you're really robbing them of the opportunity to learn. Totally. Whereas if I say, well, you know what, let's pretend I wasn't here. How would you say it? And then, wow, that could work. I wonder how they would take it. How do you think that they would take it in that tone? So that's kind of the difference between the manager, do this, the trainer, do this, versus coaching them. Oh, that's curious. Let's unpack this a little bit. So that's really what you're saying there?
And where I struggle with managers a lot of times, and even trainers, when they say they're putting on a coaching hat or they're acting as a coach, is are they truly willing to release their ego and say, I don't have the best next step? And that's where I see them fall flat the most, because it takes so much coach training, awareness, and mindfulness to say, I'm really willing to let go of my ego and believe that what I would do may not be the best idea. And so that's where, sure, I can share what I would do, but it's just what I would do. And I really don't believe it's going to get you the best outcome, because we don't know. And this is where I always say, and I've said it 9 times now, people are weird, but the behavior is strange, right? Like someone spilled coffee that morning, got in traffic, got in an accident on the road. Who knows what led to that moment? And some perfect phrase, people-to-people interactions. They require two people, constant feedback, loops. And so, yes, absolutely, I'm robbing them of the right to learn themselves. But I also don't believe if I was them, I would do it better. And that's the hardest ego to let go of. And I think most managers, because you're in a position of authority, often are holding on to that ego. We're like, well, what would you do? Okay, I guess so. That's not what I would do. And it's like, you need to say, what would you do? And really be comfortable with their decision, and then believe that what they finally say they would do could work just as well as what you would do. And that, I think, is the hardest thing to do.
That is absolutely the hardest thing to do. So let's break this into a couple of situations. So I'm the founder, I'm the owner, right? I have a smaller size company. I have to wear all of these hats. Maybe I'm a little cash flow constrained because I'm startup, bootstrapping it or whatever the case may be. So I can't get fancy Chelsea side to come to my aid to coach me. How do I put on a coaching hat when I'm like the company, whenever I have 1, 2, 10 employees? How do I put on the coaching hat there? Can I?
Mm-hmm. Sure. I like better. And I think instead of, and I know I've used this word, instead of coaching hat, think of it as a verb. So it's not that I'm wearing a hat as a coach. It's that I'm choosing in this moment to take the action verb of coaching at this time. And I say that very intentionally because, like, you're not a coach. You haven't been trained to be a coach. Sorry, just being honest. You want to fight me on it? Let's go. But like, you're not a coach. Instead, and some founders are coaches, which is what I'm a founder and I'm a coach. So most of them aren't. And I don't wear a coaching hat when I'm working with my team. I will say in this moment, I'm going to take an opportunity to coach more than manage, but I choose not to wear a coaching hat with my team members intentionally. Anywho, when you make that choice, you make that choice for a right reason. Number one, you have time to make a decision. And I think most founders mess that up. They assume everything's urgent. It's not. Sorry. You're not saving lives. Most of you, some of you are. So if you're not saving lives, it's probably not urgent. You probably have time to slow down and to focus on partnering, learning, coaching. In that case, then you have to go into risk, and risk, define what risk means. Like, if they can make a $500 mistake, and at some size companies, they can't. If they can, are you willing to let them do it? And so really getting into risk, and if you're going to give them some autonomy in the decision-making process. If you're willing to take some risk, take some time, then you can choose to coach only if they're bought in on growth. So you cannot coach someone if they're not committed to the same goal. So if you're like, I want to coach them at getting better at working with clients, but they think they're great at working with clients already, you are going to fail time and time again. So your first step, and I know you can probably ascertain this because you gave me the perfect quadrant of situational leadership, but I'm starting with, you have time, you can take risk. Are they bought in and excited? If they're not, you need to focus on democratic leadership, and you need to focus on selling them on the idea, asking questions, getting them excited. Okay, they're bought in on the same growth opportunity I see. They understand this expectation. Now I can coach, and only then can you take that verb. And that's the hardest thing, is you come into a room and you're like, I've decided I should coach more in my management style. I'm just going to coach during this meeting. And you didn't do any of those checks I mentioned earlier. And then you're just up there looking like a fool.
Yeah. And people can start to see through that if it's a flavor of the day, or especially if they don't feel safe, because my sense is you have to have an environment of safety where they can truly open up and feel like they can fail.
Yes. And have that trust. I think that's why I don't like wearing a coaching hat with my team ever, is I do sit in a position of authority and I have decision-making authority and I have budget authority and I have everything else. I'm not often sitting in that pure coach position where I believe any answer is the right answer. And so when I am, it's normally when I'm truly trying to collaborate, or I really don't care how they approach a problem. I just want them to approach it in a way that gets better results. And I think that's the other key, is like, we agree to the result, we agree to the end goal, and then I'm willing to coach because you could do this 9 ways to Sunday and that's great. However you want to do it is fine. It probably won't be how I would do it because my work style is very unique to me. And so I'm willing to coach you and sit in a coach position because I'm honest and open to any ideas that you have to better manage your time, prioritize the things all startups are bad at. Like 90% of your team at a startup probably is struggling with prioritization, and you need to coach them through that to let them decide how they should best prioritize given their work style and their life and their balance and whatever.
So bought into growth, and I'm glad that you brought that up, because, and you've also said helping somebody to motivate or motivating somebody. Mm. I'm expecting pushback here, but this should be fun. I don't think you can motivate somebody.
Oh, I like that, because of intrinsic nature of motivation.
I don't know about that. I'm not that smart, but meaning that
I should have let you finish.
if I don't want to do it, I don't care what you say, to use a Queen's English, I ain't doing it. And I can maybe get you pumped up a little bit, right? The Tony Robbins in the world, or you get pumped up music, but that's going to be very temporary. Mm. And so I think you can maybe motivate, you can get somebody to break rocks in prison for a short stem, but they're really not going to see that massive change that you want. So I guess how would you coach us to help our people to be more coachable if we're wanting to be the coach or bring in coaches?
Yeah. Not to throw more things, but I think at some point you are going to ask me about hacks and resources. Daniel Pink's Drive, which is great. I don't like any of the pop culture stuff. So if you really want it, it's the Cognitive Evaluation Theory of Motivation, which, find the academic paper. It's much better. It's true and it's realistic. There's also that really exciting video that everyone's watched that's like a cartoon that talks about, at some point, it doesn't matter how much money employees make, like they don't become more productive. It's based on the Cognitive Evaluation Theory of Motivation. All the same thing. It's a theory that's been around for a really long time. It's super cool. It just talks to, people need to feel connection, purpose, autonomy, and information. And so connection and purpose, actually, I think all of them work. So the only reason I disagree with you, you can't motivate people if you don't focus on those. So I can't, for instance, if I'm focused on the why and the connection and the purpose, and that's what's motivating to me as a founder, that works. And that makes a lot of sense because it's your baby. The company is your baby. It's your infant. You created it. You've seen it from the beginning. You did the incorporation paperwork. You love it. You stay up all night thinking about it. The rest of your team is not going to be motivated in that way. They don't care about the why and the mission as much as you do. And they shouldn't. It's why you own 50% plus of the company, right? And that's why you blood, sweat, and tears over building this business. So I think that's probably the biggest fault founders make, is they stick in the why and the purpose. And I don't think that always works. Now, I do talk to some people who the purpose of the company and the mission of the company is so motivating, like they are saving lives, that that's good enough for them. And that's great. Alternatively, you go to autonomy and information. Information sounds obvious, but it includes feedback. If I'm not giving you enough information to know how to be successful, if I'm not telling you what you need to correct or do differently, it's probably not motivating for you to do a task. And so that's the piece where it's like, I've given them all the information they need to succeed. I doubt it. Figure out what they're missing. And they're probably not going to tell you because they don't know what they don't know. So ask smart questions. And then the third is where coaching comes into play. Because in an autonomous situation, they're making decisions. And they can't make a decision if they don't know what's going on, if they're lacking something, if they're blocked. And so when we're coaching, like in my prioritization example, my team member struggling with prioritizing their week because it's a startup and there's a million things to do. And there's only however many hours in a week you work at a startup. And so I'm talking to that person And I'm giving them autonomy over how they prioritize their time, but I'm doing it through coaching because they're smart. They care. If they wanted to prioritize their time better, they would have already done it. They just don't know how. They're like, I think I'm doing it. I'm trying. I'm doing the best I can. So that's where I'm focused on coaching. I'm coaching you so that you can make autonomous decisions and how to prioritize your time better. Because I was delegating to you and it wasn't working. At first, I was like, here, go forth and prioritize. And I realized you weren't getting anything done. So now I'm going to just step back one stage in situational leadership to coaching. And then if that doesn't work, I'm going to go to buy-in. And if that doesn't work, I'm going to go to authority. And that's probably when you're getting fired, right? And so like, that's when you failed in the motivation train. But yeah, I think you can motivate people. It's just a question of what's motivating to them. Why are they demotivated? What's going on? What's changed in their life? And the last 2 years, we've seen a lot of stuff that you have zero control over. And that makes it really hard. And where can you as a manager reallocate resources? Think about things differently, really choose trade-offs that you're willing to accept and not accept and make very hard decisions, in my opinion.
Yeah. So maybe we're saying the same thing because I'm saying you can't motivate them, but our job as leaders is to help them find their own motivation. So I think that's kind of what you're saying. Is that right?
Yeah. You're just focusing on the keys to intrinsic motivation rather than like, here's more money, here's a bigger title, here's more time off, like those things don't actually.
Yeah. And so now I get what you're saying with the intrinsic motivation, because that's really it, right? Because if I do it by rewards, then those rewards are going to be expected. And if I don't get those rewards, then I look at it as a punishment. If I do it by punishments, well, I'll do that while you're around. But then as soon as I leave you to that autonomy, that I'm not doing it anymore. So it's just really rather complicated because, like you said, I love this. I'm taking this line. People are weird.
And, yeah, it's a favorite.
Right. And I excel in weirdness. So, so we have to get them bought in for growth, giving them autonomy and that really good feedback loop. And you didn't say this, but I would think intrinsic in that feedback loop is really transparency and authenticity. Mm-hmm. So they know exactly what's going on because and my guess is when you talked about beginning of a coaching, you're setting up what's the agenda, what's the goal for this meeting. That's the same for sales. That's the same for anything because you can't get angry with somebody if you don't know, give them the expectations for goodness sakes.
Yes.
So, okay. Exactly. Got it. All right. So we have the autonomy, we have the feedback. Were that leader founder, if we're going to do coaching, it has to be from the heart, authentic. Hey, right now I'm doing my verb, like you said, I'm doing coaching. I've also been taught, and it seems like you disagree with this, that a manager, and I'm going to use words that you hate here, so forgive me. Me as a manager, I have four hats: leadership, management or supervising, training and coaching. And so you're saying, not the case.
I mean, I think that's a fair oversimplification. I just, it causes, if I'm being political about it, I think it can cause challenges. Like it just causes problems. That's why I like actually situational leadership best. And to me, it's not a leadership style, which some people, it's verbs. They're verbs. Like you're making a choice as how you show up. But when is there ever a world where you're not the manager? And so I don't like the hat because I think it undermines that you always have authority. Like there's no moment, and because my background's in HR, I know this the most, there's no moment when you're sitting in that room and you're not their manager. It's the same reason you shouldn't go out drinking with your employees, right? Because you're always their manager. I don't care where you are. I don't care what's happening. You control their livelihood. You control their pay. And so you're like, why won't they open up to me and spill me their darkest secrets? Because they shouldn't. Like what crazy? Why will they open up to me when I'm their coach? Because I'm just their coach. And so that's where I think the lines get murky, unfortunate, and they start to hurt compliance a little bit. It's just not honest. And I think most people, especially CEOs of companies, startups, they learn this first and they learn this the hard way because your founding team is your family a lot of times and you support each other and you love each other and you get each other through the hardest times at the early stages of your company. And really quick as the CEO, they're no longer your family, they're your employees. And that sucks. Like I have goosebumps thinking about it. It's the worst feeling for founders because this is my team. They helped me do this. They helped me build this. And now I'm the CEO and I have to make really crappy decisions that involve their families, that involve their mortgages, that involve their lives. And I know everything about them. I was at their kids' baptism, you know? And that's terrible. And so that's where I don't love hats and I don't love roles, because you're never shifting. Like, you're always leading them. You're always managing them. You always have authority over them. And so you're never truly in a coach position, but you can choose to take an action of coaching. You can choose to take an action of being authoritative. You can choose to, but in the end, I decide if you get fired or not. And so when are you ever going to think of me differently? And I think it's kind of unethical to forget the power you hold.
Yeah, that's interesting. So to hit this then, if I'm a mentor, it's based on my experience and I'm giving advice. So a mentor is an advice giver. A supervisor is looking at the numbers and make sure you do it. A trainer is, hey, let's learn a new skill. Whereas a coach is really, okay, let's talk about you. Let's find out your skill sets. Let's pull that out. And then if we find some areas where you need some training, then we'll tell the trainer and have that trainer do it. And if you need some areas of supervision, well, that's for your manager or your leader to do. Is that kind of...
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think that's a great... I can't help it because I'm a coach. The only thing that I like about coaching that I would add to that, not to make it more nuanced than it needs to be, is this concept of what resources do you actually need, which I think is fun to explore in coaching. Like, as companies today, we turn to trainers probably too quickly. And in reality, everyone learns so differently. And it's what we're trying to do in the market. And it's just hard. It's really hard to embody. It's hard to make happen. Coaching is talk-based. So I always also share, not everyone's going to love coaching because not everybody loves talking. It's like, if you don't want to be having one-on-one conversations with someone, totally fine. You're probably going to hate coaching, and that's fair. And so similar to training and learning, I think that's where it gets a little hard when it has to be the person. So I hope as we evolve, like, I think a trainer today, you often think of like a teacher or a workshop leader, but I hope as we get going, we can evolve every piece and understand that people learn differently. Some learn from reading, watching videos, attending courses, doing things live, collaborating. Some learn from coaching, right? I'll read on my own the materials in between coaching calls. And then I want to jive out loud about how I want to apply those materials. And that's why I learn. Like, I'm a very kinesthetic learner. I'm very aware of that. I cannot learn from reading a textbook. I cannot learn from watching a video. I have to do all of them at once. And so I need to like pause the video and talk it out loud and touch it and feel it and build it with my hands. And, you know, one of the hardest ways to learn, but I figured that out. So that's the only thing I would say. I think you're totally right in your categories. It's, coaching hopefully would allow you to determine the best path to achieve those. And they're not normally as simple as supervision, but some people need it. Like, I need more accountability. I should tell my boss to hold me more accountable. I'm like, that's an awesome piece of awareness. They're going to love to hear that. You know?
Just be careful what you wish for.
Yeah.
But you said for coaching, and this is kind of curious then. So if it's setting out a clear goal, identifying the plan, which I'm guessing is going to be, well, Chelsea, so you want to achieve that goal. How do you plan to do that? Right. So that would be a good coaching question there. And then you set accountability. So how does a coach then hold accountability if I'm supposed to not do any supervision? So help me unpack that one a bit.
Sure. You'd like this a lot. It goes back to your principle of you can't motivate people. So exactly. We can't motivate them. So at the end of the call, first, if they are not accountable to whatever they said they would do, you didn't set a good contract. The goal was wrong. The goal wasn't meaningful enough. It wasn't valuable enough. So it's focusing on that. So it's not actually how are you going to accomplish the goal. Sometimes if we have a strong enough partnership, we'll say, where should we start? And sometimes as the coach, you'll just dive in with like creating an experience to help them really draw awareness to where they are. But then you get through, okay, we had all this awakening, transformational, beautiful coaching conversations, perspective shifting, all the fun buzzwords. And at the end, what do you want to take away from this? How is this valuable to you? How would you apply it? And what we're actually looking for, which most people should be highly aware of, especially if they do sales, is SMART goals. So it's how do I make the end of a coaching call specific, measurable, actionable, time bound and relevant. And if we can do all of those things, and while we wrap up, we've nailed it as a coach. Now, the thing you have to do as a coach is observe how much someone needs. So if your client is like, this is perfect, I'm going to send this email next week. Technically, that's a SMART goal. It could get more specific, but that person probably doesn't need it more specific. Then on the next coaching call, how's it been going? Oh, great. But I totally forgot what we talked about. And I didn't do anything. Why not? And why not? Not for me. I don't care. I'm not your supervisor. You committed to doing this for you. Why did you fail yourself? way more impactful than why did you fail me, the supervisor? Because suddenly they're failing themselves. And of course, we're not saying that as a coach, because like, I actually don't care if you did it or didn't do it. Did you get any value from whatever you did do? How was it valuable? And how can we set goals that are more meaningful? Why are you wasting your time? And so we always say as a coach, like, thank you for spending this time for yourself, because you're not spending it for me. You're paying me. Like, I'm here on the hour. And so it's just very different in that way. And it's so hard for people to shift that mindset. Like, I'm so sorry I didn't do the homework. Don't apologize to me. I don't care. You get zero grades. Like, there's nothing in.
And I think that's an interesting statement, because I'm expecting pushback on this. So this should be fun. Me as a manager or leader, then, listen, this goes back to that motivation. I can't motivate you to do anything. You're either going to do it or not. These are expectations. And you either find the rationale to do these expectations to earn your income, or you don't want to. And if you don't want to, no worries. You just can't work here.
Yeah. You're not going to push back from me at all on that. I mean, that's what's required for that, though, is the ability to have a very direct, challenging conversation. And, you know, this is all over in terms of statistical, like, people raise their hand. No one wants to do challenging feedback. And that's why, like, no one wants to have that conversation. As someone sitting in the HR seat, dear God, managers, please have that conversation more, because then you give us this hot pile of mess and you're like, I don't know what went wrong. Can you fire them? It's no. And so that kills me, but I think that is the truth. Where that is particularly tricky is getting over protective hesitation and truly being willing to see how sharing constructive feedback is beneficial. And you can't avoid conflict as a manager. And that's what you sign up for in being a manager, is conflict and being comfortable with it. But even if you can get past that emotionally, because a lot of people I work with are pretty high performing, so they're already past that. It's then nailing feedback that is objective and observable enough that it's useful. So if feedback's too subjective, like, I just wish they had a stronger executive presence and they'd be successful. What is executive presence?
Yeah.
Yes. And it gets wild and everyone's like, oh no, I don't do that. I don't do that. Like, guarantee you, let me shadow your work for like 5 minutes. You do that. You're like, I do it. Everyone does it. It's easier to be shorthand. It's easier to be subjective. It's easier to be quick. And that easier route is causing problems, especially as someone gets more senior, because the expectations of their work is more convoluted and less defined. Like, if I'm making widgets, did I not make enough widgets, and were the widgets broken? Sure. That's easy. That's measurable. And a lot of sales roles are like that. It just starts to get into like other pieces of, well, how did you do it? Like, yeah, I have clear KPIs for you, but how you accomplished those KPIs could have been something I gave you good feedback on to help you improve. And now I'm firing you because you missed your KPIs and I'm missing the opportunity of what could have been great talent. And I have to hire again. And that's a whole mess. So.
Yeah, and it's kind of curious, because maybe it's my personality. So I can have those difficult conversations, and to be fully transparent, it took me a while to get to that point.
Yeah.
But what I found was that if you don't have those direct conversations, you're really doing that person a disservice, because they likely think that they're doing a good job. Because my belief is, can't motivate anyone, and no one shows up intentionally to do a bad job. I really believe, I have one or two people in my mind that maybe did, but I really will believe, I'll choose to believe this, that people don't show up to do a bad job.
Yeah.
We allow them to as leaders, or we don't lay out what good is, therefore they never know how to get after it. So yep. I don't know if that aligns with, so if we're seeing that, is that more the coaching side? Is that more just regular communication and having to share that?
I think it's just communication. Like, feedback is technically just information. Like, the word comes from just data. Like, feedback is not, we've made it with this capital F. So my new rule when I'm talking about it with people is like, we can use the word, you're not allowed to use the word in conversations at all. Not once. Like, we can use the word feedback all day, every day. But the second you start talking to your team, you drop the F word, because it's not helped. Like, I have some feedback to give you. Anything you're going to say after that just died. However, you're going to follow that up. What it should just be is constant, consistent information, and you're giving it no matter what anyway. And I think that's what your example is sharing. Like, if they're not sharing constructive feedback, then they're constantly giving information that person's doing well. All they're doing is reinforcing they're doing well.
But that's interesting. So I heard it this way. Hey, are you open to some feedback? Mm-hmm. Because like asking that, well, hear me out first before you say,
yeah. Sorry.
You'll have to check out the video. She's like, no. So the reason for that, and this is at least true for me, because if, and I think a lot of high performers are like this, I don't need your feedback to tell me I did a bad job. I already can beat myself up well enough that I don't need the feedback. So sometimes if somebody starts giving me feedback, I'm like, and it like, I'm not hearing any of it. So sometimes if you go open to some feedback and they're like, no, not right now. Okay. And then you back off. So you're saying, no, don't do that.
I'm saying don't use the F word. I have some ideas after watching that presentation that I think would be useful for next time. When's a good time for us to discuss those?
Okay.
Just immediately, they're going to be more receptive to it, especially if the F word is loaded for them. Like if they're cautious about the feedback word, the high performer, the whatever, like I'm perfectionist, I want straight A's, da 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 da, just drop it. Because it's not capital F feedback, especially if the overall performance, that individual is high performing. It's just information. Like this person's crushing it in their job. I need to constantly be giving information when it's useful to let them know how to be more successful. Now, this is when as a manager, you have to let go of your ego. Is that information useful for them to actually achieve results? Or is that just information for them to be your clone? And you don't want clones of you. You won't have a creative collaborative organization. So if you can separate the two, and that's where it gets really challenging. And like, are we going for results or are we going for, I don't know, shared identity, but
yeah, if there's two of you, one of you is likely not needed. So
yeah, exactly.
God. All right. Well, I think so. One question that we were going to cover here is, so I think we got the how-to pretty darn well. So thank you for that. Yeah. Is there a right time when to coach, not to coach?
Yeah, I think maybe covered it a little bit, but when the person is open and willing to growth and to coaching. And if they're not open to that, don't coach. You're not coaching anyway. You're just doing something really weird. I don't know what's happening. And then the other piece is time and risk. So, you know, in a hospital operating room, you're probably not coaching. If someone's like flatlining, you're probably telling them what to do. Yeah. And so I say that lightly and it's easy in that example, but being honest with yourself on when actually there's one right way to do it and it needs to be done this way. Okay. You're not coaching the person, just instruct them the right way.
Yeah. Okay. Before I go into our rapid fire questions, I would like to hit the situational leadership. How much of, because that's an older book, Situational Leadership by Ken Blanchard, right?
There's three versions. There's Blanchard, Hershey, and Goldman. So they're all old.
Okay. So I don't even know if they're like regularly in print. I can't even get it on Audible, for goodness sake. So is that something that we should be looking for? Is that something that we should be learning about?
This is terrible, but I find the book version of most of these theories is just beefed up for sales. So get the short article version, find some grad student who wrote a solid summary of it. That to me is much better. I know it sounds terrible, but you know, most of articles are just to get word count for ad sales. And so it's like, why am I reading about your family history? I just want a recipe for cranberry sauce. Yeah. And so that's how I feel about these as well. But yeah, I think it's still completely practical today in the Hershey Blanchard way, which is what we've been talking about, which is the grid. It's four actions you take. The opposite is emotional intelligence. And what happens with situational leadership is people start to say, I am an authoritative leader. And that's not what it's suggesting you to do. It's not suggesting you to like pick a style, stay with that style and never shift, and then just become overly confident and egotistical that your style is correct. And I think for whatever reason, situational leadership sets people up to do that, as do most of the other leadership prevailing theories. So,
yeah, because the four quadrants really opened up my eyes, because even if you have somebody that you can delegate to, so that's that highest level to delegate, mm-hmm. if they're new to a particular role or task, that's, you can't delegate that until there's some other things. So it's really rather an interesting summary. So we'll have to, I'll see if I can summarize that and put it in the show notes. So we'll summarize that, see if it's in.
I'll send you some links. I have some easy links. And then the biggest thing that I would say about that is it feels like it was a really old book, but every single one of the other favorite pop culture things out there today is based in some principle that's been around forever. Yeah. Like Adam Grant's things on procrastination is based on temporal motivation theory of procrastination. It's been around forever. Crucial Conversations is based on information and distributed communication. And like these have been around forever. So like most of these are academic theories that have been tested and tried to death. And someone came out with a really cool pop culture way of talking about it. And now, if you want to find the actual, like where it came from, that comes from something probably more academic. Like even if we think about what's the favorite one on feedback that everyone likes, be tough and mean to people, but brutally honest. I don't like that.
Kim Scott, Radical Candor?
Yes, Radical Candor. Radical Candor is like roughly based in like touches of nonviolent communication and other things that already exist. And we just put this really cute name behind it. I have some cute names behind things that I can't find existing sources on that I use as well. You know, it is what it is. So I totally understand it. I like that people are repopularizing it and I like that they're making it go viral and I like that people are adopting it. It's just rarely new. It's based in something old. So I wouldn't worry at all that situational leadership is based in a really old book. They're all based in really old principles that have just been repurposed.
Well, so are you saying, because I love me some Kim Scott and Radical Candor.
No, it's fine. Kim Scott and Radical Candor is great. It's not applicable in a day-to-day. So I like situation behavior impact. That's my favorite feedback framework. I combine it with a question or request. Because if you're using that, it's like, how do I deliver feedback? Radical Candor. What does that mean? How do I deliver feedback? State the situation, the behavior you want changed or reinforced, share the impact, and make a question or request. Do it radically in a candid way.
All right, love it.
Yeah. So I'm totally fine with it. Love the concept. I don't think I'm believing it. I'm bought in. I'm like, ooh, Ken Scatter, who's the other guy who did it before her, but everybody ignores him. It was done first. But like, then what? You know?
Yeah. So how do I do it?
Yeah. How do I communicate radically? And I know there are concepts of it. It's fine. I prefer to have a communication framework, like give me a quick tip on how to word this in a pinch. And that's where I think SBI stands up better.
Okay. And really what Chelsea's bringing up here is there's nothing new under the sun. I mean, I don't know how many times I've said it. There's nothing new under the sun. Find the principles and I think all of this pop culture, what these people are doing is they're putting their own spin on it, their personality or how they are able to do it. And if I put a spin on it that relates better to you, you're like, oh, that's great. I'll do it that way. That makes sense. Whereas somebody else said it differently, same exact thing, just in a different way. And it went right over your head. So, yep. Yeah, love it. All right. Well, oh my gosh, I could talk about this all day. So here we go. What are the biggest challenges that you see whenever people are coaching? I mean, what's the biggest mistakes that we should avoid?
Yeah. I think biggest mistake really is just missing that contract in a valuable way, like really getting down to the goal and the value behind a goal. And if you want to start practicing this yourself as a manager, I think you should. I don't think this is reserved for coaches. It's built logical levels. And that's how you help people explore logical levels of value. I think it's the easiest resource. Pick your own though. But it's just asking why. Why like 15 times till you hit a wall? Why? How is this important to you? What would be different if you had this present? Who would you become? Who would your team become? How would it impact your organization differently? Questions to explore the meaning. And what happens then is the goal goes from, I want to do X to, oh, I actually want to do Z. This is what we help people do all the time in sales, right? Like you say you want that, but really you want this. And so that's all you're doing at the beginning of a coaching call. And if we skirt past that, well, then you just helped someone do X and it's not even meaningful for them. And that's when they don't follow through.
Yeah. And by asking those questions, they own it. And there's truly a why behind it, I would think, which is the self-motivation piece. And that was DILT, you said? D-I-L-T?
D-I-L-T, logical levels. They're my favorite version of that. But as you shared, there's 90. Pick the one you like best.
Got it. All right. Now, how about... So again, the biggest mistake they make is not what?
Just setting a contract,
setting that
clarifying
contract.
A goal. Yeah. The contract's coachy speak. I would say having a clear goal.
Okay, got it. So hoping to identify that clear goal. And then best business hack for whether it's talent, finding that talent, especially with what you do, sales, because you're pretty darn good at sales. I know that. And then, or scaling a business because you've done that a time or two. So pick one. What's a good hack for us?
It's going to stay really on brand and be super obvious. Listen, listen to your employees, like actually listen to them. I know this doesn't sound like a business hack, but it is. You want to know the key and the solution for success? Listen to them, what they think, how they think about the customer, how they think you should be selling, how they think you should be growing, what they think your business model is, what they want, what they need. And if you think you're listening to them, I would suggest you try a listening framework and really try it. Like active listening. I listen actively. I doubt you do. Like just try it again. And I practice constantly. I have a coach. I have a therapist. Like I think everyone should have the things that allows them to be a successful, aware, present human being with good emotional intelligence. And part of that is practicing and never thinking I'm such an expert. I'm perfect. I'm constantly practicing, evolving, growing as a person because the people around me are doing the same thing and they're different people and they're new people. So listen.
What would you say to the leader who says constantly trying to listen, but my team won't speak. My team won't share. What do you say to that person?
You're probably not sharing as well. Vulnerability loop starts with you. So when they ask you how you're doing, good, how are you? It's your first problem. Your first opportunity is share how you're doing. Share how your break was. Honestly, kind of sucked. You know, I don't really like being around family in a concentrated way. That was a lot, a little overwhelming. How was your break? And you can choose. I'm not saying spill your guts, but if your team's not sharing, you're not sharing. And so start there.
Interesting. That's good. Good feedback a little bit. All right. Resources that you might recommend, books, podcasts, guides that you might suggest.
Yeah. I've talked to a few. If you are interested, especially you, Brian, you need to listen to Daniel Pink. Drive. Start with his TED Talk because it's easier. And I think the books are all inflated and too long. So start with his TED Talk. I also do love, I know I said DILS Logical Levels, but that's the academic version. I do love The Golden Circle. I think it's Adam Grant. He has a podcast. He is in everything now. You know, he's totally inflated. But it just starts with why and like really defining the why and the purpose. So
is that Simon Sinek?
Simon Sinek. That's right. Okay. Simon Sinek. Adam Grant does procrastination. He's also great.
It's a great TED Talk on the procrastination monster.
Yes. The productive procrastination. Yeah. I also love Brené Brown. She's just can't stop being a favorite with her empathy versus sympathy metaphors. I think she defines it best. And I've read the academic texts on it. And to me, Brené Brown's the first person who that video she does on sympathy and empathy. I was like, wow, I finally know what these things mean. So those are probably trying to think.
Is Brené Brown the Dare to Lead?
Yes.
Okay. Got it.
But again, I go more to the videos than the books.
Yeah. And I love Daniel Pink's Drive, the TED Talk. There is a hand drawn.
You've seen it and you still don't think you can motivate people?
I still don't think you can motivate people. Nope.
No, I didn't convince you right now. Should we start over? Darn.
All right. And then what future do you see coming down the pike? What trends or what are you excited to see coming, or what are you going, oh my gosh, and running away from?
Yeah. So interesting, because a lot of it to me is like a wheel sort of being recreated and like redone in different ways. But I'll say the biggest trend that I'm excited about, which I know seems so obvious, but it really didn't exist before now. And I know this is obvious, COVID and whatever else, but I'm excited about distributed work. Like when I got my MBA, the chief people officer of Automattic, which is the company that started WordPress, came and talked to us about distributed work and how it works and how they do it at Automattic. And it was a novel thing. And, you know, I'm young, so that wasn't that long ago. And I was just sitting there like, this is so exciting. I can't believe this. Like, this is the type of company I want to build. And then we started Marlo. We started as distributed. And people thought we were crazy. Like, investors were cautious to invest in us because we were co-founders living across the country. Now that's all out the window. And so I know it seems simple and it's all we've been talking about. But the future of that is going to be really, really rad. And I can't wait to see what that allows people to do and where we can hire talent and how we can have companies work differently and work in an interesting manner. So that's definitely the trend I'm most excited for. And I know it seems like it already existed, but it really didn't. Like, as a co-founder, got so much slack for it. And now people are like, oh, of course we're virtual.
Yeah. Well, and it's kind of curious because even though everyone's doing it, there are still people that are denying it or trying to run away from it instead of embracing it, because you bring up a really good point. And I don't think that we've truly understand the ramification that we have whenever it comes to talent, because we are now worldwide talent. And I mean, it is super exciting. So I love that one. All right. So, hey, who should reach out to you? How should they do it? And why should people reach out to you?
Yeah. If you're interested in talking about any of these things at all, feel free, reach out, find me on LinkedIn, Chelsea Sides. Someone on my sales team will get back to you. And then eventually we'll have a call. Also, I don't care. Email me, chelsea@getmarlow.com, GETMARLOW.com. But yeah, I love talking about this stuff, period. We specialize in coaching managers and emerging leaders and helping them enhance their management leadership skills through coaching so that it's done in a more personalized, autonomous way. So if you're interested in that for your company, also reach out as well. But ultimately, I think I learned best, I said kinesthetically, through this. So I have calls like this as often as I can.
Nice. Well, we can't thank you enough for coming on board here, and take this, apply it for goodness sakes. Learning for learning's sake is pointless. Learning for application's sake. Let's do it. Let's coach some people, get them to realize their full potential, have some fun, and go save some lives out there, would you? All right. Thanks, everyone. Chelsea, any final parting last words?
I think you said it best. Save some lives. I'll say people are weird. That's my sign off.
People are weird. All right. So we'll see you, a bunch of weirdos. Until next time, we'll see you.